Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
As the subject was in a seated position, he used a two-handed pistol grip hold.
That's very concerning. I'm very scared. I first of all, I can't even believe that could happen.
There are some of our colleagues last night and others who didn't think that...
It was originally, really, it was Will Dawes Butler was the original guy who did it.
He proceeded to rip his shirt off and then take his pants off.
Boy, what a headache.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch, and through the looking glass we go. Going places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot. Coming up this hour, the alleged WikiLeaks founder's sex assaults are leaked. Details, I should say. And a drug maker picks a bad way to lay off 1,500 employees. That's right. Plus, Al Sharpton says the FCC is mulling public hearings to discuss Rush Limbaugh's alleged racism. And our number is 877-876-PHIL. PhilHendryShow.com is also the web home of the Phil Hendry Show. Go on over there and get a backstage pass. You watch live streaming video of the show. You can listen to the audio on our live streaming video, as well as access our thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of archived material. We have classic Phil podcasts. We have our daily podcasts. We have mini podcasts. Brother, we got podcasts, man. And it's all over there at PhilHendryShow.com. We have a news feed, blogs, comment section for everyone that is a Backstage Pass member, and guaranteed email response from your brother here, Phil Hendry, if you're a Backstage Pass member. And believe me, when I say, you know, we're responding to email, some of this stuff is getting psycho, you know.
What are you saying?
Well, it's not psycho, but I mean, some people are like, how come you're talking to me like that, you know? Like, I'm not your psychiatrist, you know. I will respond to your email.
Yeah, well, you know, they know that you're going to respond to email, so they're all like talking to you about how they're all up, you know, their lives suck and all that stuff.
Well, I just tell them I'm not, you know, I can't do that, man. You know, I'll talk to you about normal things, but I'm not going to get into your personality problems. God almighty. You know, we have some of the great, I think we got the greatest fans in radio. They're so passionate about our show, so into our show, but there's a small percentage of them that are, like, weird, man. I mean, they're, like, over the line.
Yeah, well, I know people are that, they're getting, like, psycho and everything.
Right. I may have to start arming myself, you know, with tasers and Browning automatic weapons and...
What about a tank? Like, get a tank.
I could have a tank, you know.
What about, like, a flak jacket?
Well, I don't think I'd need a flak jacket if I had a tank. But
what about a Browning automatic rifle?
I just said a Browning automatic rifle.
What about a BAR?
That's a Browning automatic rifle.
What about, like, that Browning that...
Will you shut up with the Browning, okay? The Browning, by the way, was predated the Thompson submachine gun, just for people who want a little historical note. All right, 877-876-PHIL. There's so much to talk about, so much to get into. What did I just talk about, this Julian Assange guy? But I should mention right at the top of the hour, because he was very influential in the life and the times of artists that my generation liked. He was very good friends with Frank Zappa. He came from Los Angeles. He was a native, I think, of the same area where Frank Zappa came from. Where is that, like Lancaster? I think Zappa and Don Van Vliet, who was also known as Captain Beefheart. He died today, yesterday now, Friday, at the age of 69, according to his manager. The cause of Van Vliet's death was not immediately known, though several outlets were reporting it was due to complications from multiple sclerosis, which he'd battled since the 1990s. Van Vliet was an accomplished avant-garde musician and visual artist who, along with a constantly rotating crew of fellow oddballs, his hand-picked magic band, and we all remember hearing about, you know, Captain Beefheart and his magic band. As a matter of fact, I would hear a lot about Captain Beefheart and his magic band, but every time I turned the radio on to hear him...
He wasn't on the radio?
They didn't play him on the radio, no. Finally, when we got FM rock and roll, they would start to play some of his stuff. The origin of his famous Captain Beefheart stage name remains somewhat cloudy. Well, it's probably just some weird-ass name he picked. Some say it came from a script he wrote with childhood friend and rival Frank Zappa, but the impact it would have on the world of music and art is not. Beginning in 1967 with the release of Beefheart and the Magic Band's seminal Safe as Milk, and rolling on through other classic bizarre gems like 1969's Trout Mask Replica, which melded elements of blues, jazz, and avant-garde spoken word, and was named by Rolling Stone as the 58th greatest album of all time in 2003. Also 1972's bar-friendly Clear Spot and 1978's Shiny Beast Bat Chain Puller. Man, oh man.
That's pretty funny, like Zappa.
Yeah, they both had a similar sense of humor, yeah. Bat Chain Puller. Anyway, Captain Beefheart forged a territory that was uniquely, unquestionably his. Record sales and the mainstream media, be damned. Well, we all know about that, don't we? Now let's listen a little bit here of Captain Beefheart and his magic band. And here he performs a live version of the song Her Eyes Are a Blue Million Miles. Wow. Off his album, Rhino, off the album, what does that mean, Rhino High Five? That's not his album. It's off of Rhino, right?
Well, yeah, I thought it was.
Rhino probably put the collection together. Here it is. That ain't even music, man. What? That's not even music. Hey, why don't you shut up, man, until the song's done?
Yeah.
Hey, why don't you shut up, man? Were you talking to me?
No, I'm talking to him.
I'm trying to hear the song. What are you saying?
That don't sound like music to me.
All right, so it don't sound like music to you, man. Some people... See, it's Robert, it's not about... This music ain't, like, dance-to-it music. It's goofy, right?
Well, yeah, I'll give you that.
All right, well, if you understand that it's goofy, then you understand it. It's goofball. It's, to a musician, it's probably got a lot of stuff going on, too, because he was a... I believe that Don Van Vliet... I know that Zappa could read music, meaning they could read musical charts. And I think Don Van Vliet could read musical charts. And so they wrote, when I say these guys wrote music, they literally, you know.
You mean like that, like the movie where Tom Hulce was in?
Amadeus, yeah. About Mozart.
About Mozart, man. Yeah, like him?
Yeah, they could write music like Mozart. That's what Frank Zappa could, and so could this guy. So they did a lot of weird stuff. Zappa wrote a symphony, I think, or something like that, that he did with the L.A. Philharmonic called 200 Motels. So, you know, in the process, going on with the story here about Don Van Vliet, Captain Beefheart, in the process, he earned a legion of loyal followers, including Sonic Youth's Thurston Moore, Nirvana's Kurt Cobain, the White Stripes' Jack White, who, along with his band The Dead Weather, filmed their Treat Me Like Your Mother video near Van Vliet's childhood home in Lancaster, California. I was right, it was Lancaster. And The Simpsons creator Matt Groening, and along with a handful of other acts, is credited with ushering in the genre we now commonly refer to as alternative rock. After releasing Ice Cream for Crow in 1982, Van Vliet all but retired from the music industry, although the Magic Band would continue on without him, focusing instead on his other passion, painting. He would spend the remainder of his days living in Northern California with his wife Jan, creating abstract expressionist works, which showed off in New York's Michael Werner Gallery. By the 1990s, he largely disappeared from the public eye, save for a few appearances, most prominently in Anton Corbijn's film Some Yo-Yo Stuff, where he appeared to be frail and weakened.
What?
Some Yo-Yo Stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
In a statement released to a Rolling Stone, the Michael Werner Gallery called Van Vliet a complex and influential figure in the visual and performing arts and added that his music and art will live on as his lasting legacy. After two decades in the spotlight as an avant-garde composer and performer, Van Vliet retired from performing to devote himself to wholeheartedly painting and drawing. The more I read this, the more far out this cat gets. He ain't nothing like me, you know?
You are, yeah, he like a Picasso or something.
Well, about Picasso... But, I mean, this dude was like an artist, you know?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's cool, but...
It ain't nothing I know anything about. I mean, I you know, he's all, like, music and then painting and...
What are you going to do? You retire. What would you, wouldn't you paint?
Paint? What the hell am I going to paint?
Garage door?
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'd paint, a garage door.
What do you mean, man? You know, well, what do you do when you retire?
What am I going to do when I retire? I'm going to sit on my ass and do nothing. I'm going to stare at a wall. That's what I'm going to do when I retire. okay?
You don't want to do no painting or nothing.
What painting am I going to do? Are you crazy? What painting am I? I can't even draw, man.
Have you ever, like, what, can you draw a stick man?
Can I do what?
Can you draw a stick man?
Yeah, I can draw a stick man.
Well, you can do a stick man and then just do a lot of colors and stuff on it.
Nobody's going to...
What's wrong with that?
No one's going to buy my stick man with a bunch of colors on it. Guaranteed, man. I got to paint nothing. This is all I know how to do. You understand? This is it. This is all I know how to do. And once this is over, forget it, man.
What about, like, writing children's books?
Hey, buddy, you putting me on or something?
No.
I'm not writing any children's books. Writing would be the only thing. I can't write. Just, I could write, but I ain't going to write. I'm not going to do anything, and that's all I'm going to do. I ain't going to do nothing. All right, coming up, we have the Dr. Green Thumb report. There you go. I may try getting my medical marijuana license. How about that? I'll open up a dispensary.
That's good.
All right. When we come back, we have the Dr. Green Thumb report, and then we have a little discussion of Barack Obama, our question of the week. Who does he have to fire to get elected to a second term? The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hello, Dr. Green Thumb. Paging Dr. Green Thumb.
And it's time for the Dr. Green Thumb Report on this Friday night. The Phil Hendry Show presenting the Dr. Green Thumb Report. Dateline, Tinley Park, Illinois. Family furious the cops busted pot operation. A Tinley Park, Illinois couple was out of jail and cleaning up their house Thursday evening after being arrested and charged with running $1 million marijuana lab from their home. John Geekin, age 52, and his geek wife Darlene, age 52, as fate would have it, didn't deny growing the plant but said they weren't distributing and seemed most upset about the raid on their 7,000-square-foot home located in the 5300 block of West 175th Street. You can't come into somebody's home and do that, said John Geekin as he stood among the belongings strewn about the room. It doesn't matter what they found. Yes, they can. Because they've got this gun, they've got this badge, and they've got the love of Jesus in their pretty green eyes. Boo! Along with the pot plants, police said they found $7,000 in cash and computers and charts used to track the operation. Mr. Geekin refused the official's estimation as to the amount of pot they had. Are they retarded? There's not $1 million worth of pot. I'd like to have that money. I'd be living in Mexico right now instead of my 7,000-square-foot house, which isn't near large enough for my big fat ass or my ego. Darlene Geekin said it was the faltering economy that drove her to the pot business. The real estate taxes went up $4,000. My sons are unemployed. They can't find jobs. John and Darlene Geekin, as well as their 27-year-old deadbeat son, Christopher, and another slob, 22-year-old James Osmolski, were all arrested and charged with production, manufacturing, and possession with intent to deliver. Good. Good riddance. Can we have your dope? Anyway, New Jersey mother's son accused of selling, guess what? Marijuana. Keensburg, New Jersey. Authorities have accused a 62-year-old mother and a 29-year-old son of selling marijuana out of their New Jersey apartment, or their New Jersey apartment, one of the two. Irene Steam and Brett Strumberger were arrested after Keensburg police raided their home on Wednesday. Deputy Police Chief Michael Pigo told the Asbury Park Press police acted on complaints from concerned citizen. Strumberger and Stern were charged with possession of marijuana with intent to distribute. It's not clear whether they have retained lawyers or whether they know what a lawyer is. Dateline The Hague, Netherlands. The Dutch government moved a step closer to barring tourists from Holland's signature marijuana bars with a ruling by the European Court of Justice on Thursday that the ban wouldn't violate European law. The Luxembourg-based court said the southern Dutch city of Maastricht was within its rights when it briefly banned non-Dutch residents from its soft drug dens in 2005. The policy aimed at curbing problems by so-called drug tourists who flock to the city like a bunch of slobs from nearby Belgium and Germany, and they make the place too hot for everybody. The visitors have a reputation for rowdiness, creating havoc on the roads and in the city's narrow medieval lanes. You guys might want to update the roads, though. Seriously, I mean, it's like been 500 years ago. Well, this road was just built 500 years ago. Why would we want to update that? In any event, however, and for going and in conclusion, while marijuana is technically illegal in the Netherlands, it's been sold openly for decades in designated cafes known as coffee shops. That's what they call pot over there, I guess. Coffee.
Really?
Yeah.
Can I get a cup of coffee, please?
Right. Give me a baggie of dope, I guess. Police make no arrests for possession of small amounts. However, the new conservative government of Prime Minister Mark Rutte is planning to make the coffee shop members-only clubs aimed at shutting out tourists. The court said in its written ruling that banning foreigners from coffee shops constitutes a measure capable of substantially limiting drug tourism and consequently of reducing the problem that those tourists cause. Nice going! See, all these laws that bar you from having fun are the result of a dumbass or collections of dumbasses, and they think it's funny. Now, one of the ways that it wouldn't be funny is if you find out who the dumbasses were that had the law passed to keep people from smoking weed and beat the crap out of them. How about that? Craigslist ad leads man's arrest on drug charges. Nevada City, North Carolina. County narcotics officers responded to a Craigslist ad, arrested a Nevada City man for allegedly trying to sell 5 pounds of dope. Gary Lester Feiss, age 47, allegedly put an ad in the popular internet marketplace to sell his extra meds. The advertisement listed different strains of medical marijuana, as well as dollar amounts for the product to help cover growing costs and delivery of the product. Undercover officers answering the ad during a routine search of online advertisements and met with Faze, sized him up, realized he was a jackass who allegedly provided a sample of his marijuana, and then Faze agreed to sell 5 pounds of the dope for $8,000. Then detectives from Nevada County Sheriff's Narcotics Task Force and Major Crimes Unit got a search warrant, agreed to meet Faze in the parking lot, and busted him! Finally, California, naturally, or excuse me, California man, naturally, shipped marijuana to Tennessee, Spring City, Tennessee. Rhea County Sheriff investigators arrested Anthony Livers after he shipped 8 pounds of dope, that would be medical marijuana, to a relative's house in Rhea County from California. No one was at the home at the time of the delivery, so the postal worker left a note for Livers to pick up the package at the Spring City post office. Employees were noticing a strong marijuana smell coming from the box, and they alerted Rhea County deputies. Investigators brought in drug-sniffing dogs who picked up on the scent, and the officers set up a sting operation, and the guy was arrested, and he's stupid. That's the Dr. Green Thumb report. You know, there's so many people that make the same mistake over and over again. What do they call it? Insanities, doing the same thing over and over again? Don't mail weed. Don't mail large amounts of dope. Dumb. Large amounts of dope in the mail will get you arrested and every Christian soul. All right. 87. You know, by the way, when I say every Christian soul, you know.
Yeah, it's from Close Encounters.
Yeah, it's from the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So I'm not just coming. I'm not trying. You know, it's not. I'm not being disrespectful. That's exactly what the guy says in the movie Close Encounters. He says, we need something that will scare every Christian soul out of whatever, 50 square miles, because there's a flying saucer that's about to land.
Really?
You didn't see the movie?
Uh-uh.
You didn't see Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
No. It's pretty good. It's the special effects is old and everything, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool movie. It's about a guy that, and a bunch of people who are suddenly seeing a vision in their mind, right?
Yeah.
And you know what the vision is?
Uh-uh.
It's of Devil's Tower, Wyoming, that kind of mountain, you know?
I don't know.
Well, it's like a mountain, and they're seeing this. And they're attempting to create it. They're attempting to create it by drawing it. They're attempting to create it by sculpting it. In the case of the hero of the movie, which is played by Richard Dreyfuss, he tries to sculpt it with clay and with mashed potatoes. And his family thinks he's nuts and they split, right? So finally, these people, all of them together, not together, but separately, find their way to the Devil's Tower in Wyoming.
Yeah, and then they got to get everybody out of there because the flying saucer is going to land.
What are you talking about, man? Well, that's why they need to go to this Devil's Tower, because these people have been drawn by the aliens who are going to be landing a flying saucer there. And for some reason, these people have been given the message that the aliens are going to be hitting town. So they want to, they go.
I don't get it, man. In other words, I mean, who told them?
Never mind, man. They're just getting a mental thing and they go to Devil's Tower in Wyoming. And there's an army guy there and he needs to evacuate everybody. because he wants to have this flying saucer land with a limited amount of publicity, right?
Yeah.
So they come up with a phony baloney excuse that nerve gas got released into the air, and so they got to get everybody out of there. Okay? And that's what he said when he said, I want something that'll get every Christian soul out of here.
Yeah, but I don't understand that they went to a mountain with mashed potatoes.
Oh, I don't. You know what, man? I messed it up, okay? I can't explain it, okay? I just don't.
Here, man. Here it is on IMDb.
IMDb.
Yeah.
Read that. All right, a drug maker picks a... are we breaking? Yeah, a drug maker picks a bad way to lay off 1,700 employees. Wait till you hear what this guy did. Plus, who does Obama have to fire for a second term? Our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. We'll be right back.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
We have a story here that, you know, it's an important story, and we only unfortunately have one side to the story, and I never liked that. I like to have, and did you guys find anything?
Yeah, well, I looked, and only one was Huffington Post, and that's it.
Well, we try to find that Huffington Post had a story there, but I did find this one here, right here.
Sanofi Aventis, worst performing pharmaceutical.
What's that mean?
It means it's the worst performing pharmaceutical. It did not perform. It's not, its profits suck. Its performance sucks as far as Wall Street goes. Now, why am I bringing all of this up? On November the 30th, employees at Sanofi Aventis Pharmaceuticals, the world's fourth biggest drug maker, received an email from the company wishing them a happy Thanksgiving them and telling them to check their email again at 5 a.m. on Tuesday, December the 2nd. This is according to the Huffington Post. I'm not saying that the Huffington Post doesn't get things right, but I am saying this, that nowadays, folks, you can't just read the Huffington Post or anybody and figure you get the news. You have to find it somewhere else as well. They're not using the person's name. AR, a Sanofi Aventis sales rep in California who wished to be anonymous as her contract forbids publicly disparaging the company, said she and her co-workers, they're going to find out who you are, AR, said she and her co-workers each received one of the two mass emails the company sent out on that Tuesday morning, December the 2nd. Both emails contained a code, an 800 number, and a call line, either 8 a.m. or 8:30 a.m. The employees who were instructed to call in at the earlier time were told they would keep their jobs. But the 1,700 employees who called in at 8:30 weren't so lucky. They were laid off by a voice on the other line that told them to stop working immediately and had no opportunity for question or comment. I guess it was a recording. Unfortunately, AR found herself in the second group. The way they did this was so brutal and inhumane, she told the Huffington Post, we were each assigned an employee number. Okay, so that's the lady's complaining she got fired, and how they fired people, I don't know. But they did lay off 1,700 people as of December the 2nd. It's a poorly performing company. The Scranton Times-Tribune of Pennsylvania wrote an article on October the 9th, 2010, that there were going to be 1,700 layoffs, but it focused on the fact that local employees of the company were safe. And when they say local employees of the company, we're talking about New Jersey. This is where this company is located, Bridgewater, New Jersey. Now, the reason why we brought this up to you guys was that firing people ahead of Christmas is always just, it's going to stick in your craw, isn't it? Now, there may be some very good reasons for that. There may be some very good reasons for people being fired just ahead of Christmas in terms of the financials and the second, third, fourth quarter, etc., and the fiscal year and la-la-la-la, ba-ba-ba. But it's still one hell of a brutal thing to do. And that's what they did on December the 2nd. Hi, it's Christmas? Yeah, okay, you're fired. If we make it through December.
What's that?
That's that Merle Haggard song.
I don't. What did you do that for?
because it reminded me of the Merle Haggard song, okay? So anyway, Sanofi of Venice told its employees they would be paid through December 31st, and they gave them a modest severance package. Oh, modest. AR, who had only been working at the company a year and a half, received 13 weeks of pay and benefits. It's 3 months, man. That's 3 months severance. AR says a representative from, you know what? 3 months severance ain't bad after only a year and a half. Give me a break. You ought to work in radio, man. You know that 90% of the guys that are working in radio, they get 2 weeks. AR says a representative from an outside company hired by Sanofi of Venice to repossess materials came by almost immediately after the layoff to take back the company car she'd been driving. Of course they would. My manager had convinced me to sell my personal car 3 months earlier because he said the company was in really good shape, she said. I don't really read the newspapers, and I didn't see that Scranton Times piece that said they were going to lay off 1,700 people on October the 9th, 2010, so I went ahead and sold my car. I might have to use my severance pay to buy a new... I can't feel sorry for this woman because she's looking for reasons to, you know... The reality is the economy sucks, and the people that run Savanti, whatever the hell this crap can company is called, they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground. They're losing money. They're the fourth largest. What are they going to be, the fifth or the sixth or the seventh? Jack Cox, the senior director of media relations, says it wasn't ideal. Rather than cascade these announcements and stretch the notifications over the course of days, we decided to address these colleagues at one time to explain the rationale for the reductions and express appreciation, whatever. We acknowledged in the call that delivering this news on a teleconference wasn't ideal, but given the scope and scale of the reduction, there was no other way to share this news quickly and consistently. Well, you know what, Jack, you and your friends there at Sanofi of Venice, you leave a lot to be desired when it comes to handling people. It sounds, I would say, pretty heavy-handed, ham-fisted. You jackasses are so fast to fire people that sometimes you don't realize what it is you're doing, but I understand you have to fire people. So it was ham-fisted. They're going to hate your guts, but you know that that's life, right? You understand that, right?
They got to understand. They're going to fire people and nothing they can do.
There's nothing you can do. They're going to hate your guts. And in many ways, they have a right to hate your guts. Because December the 2nd, no matter what it is that you guys need to get done for your little drug-making company, that's a hell of a time to fire people. Do you know that, Jack? Are you aware of that, Jack?
Well, I don't know, Phil. No.
December the 2nd, man. You know what's coming up.
A lot of people are Jewish. A lot of people are Muslim. And a lot of people aren't.
But I understand, and I'm not being facetious. I understand. They got to get their company straightened out. And one of the things that happens, as you know, folks, you can do, you read the newspaper. They fired 1,700 people. They have sold off some assets. They have merged divisions. And sometimes that doesn't help. And in a year or 6 months, you read Sanofi Aventis, they went belly up with their legs in the air, man. They are no more, baby. And that can possibly happen. Because they got rid of these 1,700 folks. The New York, December 16th, at half of the trading session, the market is trading higher. Now, this was today. Stocks of pharmaceutical companies are also trading higher, with the New York Stock Exchange Drug Index at 308.03, which represents a 6% versus the previous trading session close. That's an increase, okay? However, with all of that good stuff happening, this drug company, this Sanofi Aventis, sucks. They went down a half of a percent. And when you want to make the bottom line look good for your shareholders, here's what you do. You fire people. It's the easiest way to fatten up a bottom line in the world. Making actual profit, going out and actually selling, going out and actually making a product that somebody wants to buy, going out and, you know, expanding your business, that's very, very difficult to do. Some of these guys, to hold on to their jobs, they fire people. That way, look at this. See, I saved you money and I fired and they hold on to their job. That's why we hate you technocrats. That's why we can't stand you slobs. More than anything else, it isn't the fact that we got fired. It's the fact that we got fired in lieu of you guys knowing how to do your jobs. That's all. And I say we. I'm speaking for, well, I'd like to think I'm speaking for the working man and woman of America. And I thank you.
Hello, Dr. Green Thumb.
Anyway.
That's a very beautiful monologue, Mr. Henry.
Thank you. Okay. World famous Phil Henry Show here. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Now then. Obama wants to have a second term, and I thought we could kick around here in our news panel here this evening, Bud, you and Robert. Who does Obama have to fire to get a second term, Bud?
Well, I mean, I don't think he's going to get a second term. I think he'll be defeated.
No, no, no. I understand that. I understand you don't think he'll get a second term. But who do you think sucks in his administration that needs to get fired, oh baby?
Well, I mean, I don't like that lady on NBC, on MSNBC.
Or MSNBC?
MSNBC, man.
Yeah, who's the lady that they have?
Who?
Obama.
A lady that Obama had? I don't know who you're talking about.
She's always standing on the driveway there.
That Jarrett lady.
That, what's her name, Lisa Jarrett?
Yeah, I think they should fire her. She's an idiot. Because they said that, I just think she's an idiot.
The Valerie Jarrett. Is that her name? Yeah, Valerie Jarrett. And you think that she should be fired because she's an idiot. You think that woman, she's a senior advisor to President Obama. What is she doing wrong?
She's just an idiot. She stands there and, oh, yeah, well, you know, presidents can do this and everything.
Robert, what do you think?
I think Joe Biden, man. I think Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden's an idiot, man.
Yeah, that I was going to say him, too.
No, you weren't, man. You had all the time in the world to think of something. You come up with Valerie Jarrett.
Yeah, you already picked your name, but you agree with him, huh?
Yeah. I was going to say Joe Biden.
No, you weren't, man. You had all the time to pick Joe Biden. You didn't pick Joe Biden.
All right, well, why do you say Joe Biden?
Well, I mean, Joe Biden, nobody likes Joe Biden. Nobody likes Joe Biden. Everybody hates him, you know, because he's so stupid. He's so, like, redneck and everything, you know.
And, well, some people like him.
No, I agree with Robert. I think Joe Biden, I mean, Biden's okay. You can tell that he sort of just stands there with a big grin on his kisser, but I don't know. He doesn't come off, of all the vice presidents we've had, okay, let's say Dick Cheney to Al Gore, even Dan Quayle, man. Quayle makes this guy look, you know, really, I think Joe Biden makes Quayle look like a genius.
I don't know what Quayle is.
Quayle was the vice president of Daddy Bush. All right, well, I think, in my opinion, Obama needs to get rid of, in my opinion, I think Eric Holder, this guy has got, he's walking around, he can't find his ass with both hands. I listened to this man, and I really wanted to believe in Eric Holder. I really wanted to, because he's the attorney general, and that's a really important position, given what the country's been through over the last 10 years. I listened to this jackass in front of that Senate committee, talking about whether he would, this was the question, and he never answered it. Here's the question. Would you try Osama bin Laden in a military tribunal?
Oh, yeah, I remember this.
Or in a civilian court?
What did he say?
He said, I don't have to answer that because we'll never capture him alive. And they kept asking, okay, well, fine, I understand. But just, you know, for grin, you know, for craps and giggles, will you try this guy in a military tribunal or a civilian court? Well, we'll never have to do that because we'll never catch him alive. I'm telling you, it'll never happen. You never saw a guy try to squirm out of answering something in your life. And guess what? He never did answer it.
Why didn't they make him answer it?
Because they didn't make him answer it. And I don't know why they didn't make him answer it. If they'd made him answer it, that probably would have been the end of Eric Holder right there. Oh, my God, this guy, it was driving me out of my mind. Why is that a hard question to answer? Hi. Oh, here's the quote. Thank you. Thanks, bud.
Yeah, I thought I'd look it up, or I had Rance look it up. I told Rance, I said, look it up. And I told him and didn't be quick about it.
No, you didn't.
You don't talk to him that way?
Well, yeah, I did.
No, you didn't talk to him like that. Here it is. Here's Holder in front of the subcommittee. Let's deal with reality. You're talking about a hypothetical that will never occur. The reality is that we will be reading Miranda rights to the corpse of Osama bin Laden. He will never appear in an American courtroom. That's the reality. He'll be killed by us, or he'll be killed by his own people, so he's not captured by us. We know that. So I guess you can read between the lines. He did say American courtroom, so that's where he would have him.
Oh, man, he would have it in a courtroom.
That's right. That is Eric Holder to a T. He'd have Osama bin Laden, a guy that launched a military attack. I mean, if you listen to Osama bin Laden, he was talking after that happened. He said this attack is equal, using these brothers, as he put it, using them this way is equal to using one corps of an army. He's using the military terms. He says, "Use how many guys did he use? Like 20 for, you know, there's four guys per plane, five guys per plane, 20 guys, something like 19. 19 should have been 20. 19 guys take up what you would ordinarily use one army corps for. So if this was not a military attack on the United States by psychopaths, yes, by a gang of psychopaths, yes, but nonetheless with a military value to the target, and they launched the attack. This guy wants to take this enemy, the head of a armed international gang, not affiliated with any country, not marching under any flag, not marching under any particular rank. In other words, in violation of every single solitary convention, every Geneva Convention, in violation of everything. You can't even call them prisoners of war. They don't qualify as prisoners of war. This jackass is going to, we're going to stick this ass in an American courtroom. He deserves to be waterboarded, probably killed while he's being waterboarded, and then have his ass thrown in a dumpster someplace. He doesn't even exist according to international law.
I didn't know that.
He doesn't. Representative Culberson from Texas asked Holder if Osama bin Laden would have the same rights as Charlie Manson. Holder simply responded, "In some ways, I think they're comparable." All right. We'll take a break.
Who else do you think they ought to fire?
I think President Obama should fire. I think he's fine. We'll be back. World famous Robert Gibbs. There you go. Phil Hendry Show.
It's Robert Gibbs. Phil Hendry Show.
Poor bumbling fool.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, let me ask you something. You know, I haven't really talked about this guy, this WikiLeaks guy, because the stupidity around that story has gotten to record-breaking heights. It's reaching for the stars, man, the dumb on that. I mean, that thing is draped. It's oozing in dumb. There's just, from Michael Moore opening his yap to, you name it, man. I mean, people raising money and the dumbasses on the internet that think this has exposed some huge cache of truths about America being the evil manipulator behind the scenes of oh so many things. WikiLeaks, just for those of you who are listening and those of you who are sober, in other words, you know, you're awake, you're sober and you're clear thinking people, but you may not know that much about the story. Let me tell you this, and you don't have to take my word for this. WikiLeaks has not uncovered anything of any real value other than the fact that it has uncovered rather frank communications along diplomatic channels about people that we deal with in the world. There is nothing in what has been leaked by this little man who doesn't even know what he has that's of any significance at all. Nothing. Sure, we think Ahmadinejad's a douchebag. Sure, we think this government or that government's a pain in the ass to deal with. This is the way the American diplomats have been talking to each other since the beginning of time. Since the beginning of the country, American diplomats have discussed with each other in very frank terms the people that we have to deal with internationally. There has been no smoking gun about how America has done dirt here or there. Nothing. It's amazingly clean. This guy, Assange, says he has a lot more he's going to roll out. Well, I got money that says he hasn't gotten anything that's going to top what he's already rolled out. And anybody that's really thinking clearly, even the people that are not big fans of the U.S. government, and I'm so sorry to say that some of them include American citizens, incredibly, like Fat Ass, or like Oberfuhrer, even they know that there's nothing there. Now what we have, this Assange guy, who I thought might have been railroaded by these charges of rape, I thought, well, look it, if we're going to get this guy, let's get him clean. Don't start, you know, coming up with weird stuff. Well, guess what? Details of his sex crime allegations against this Assange surface. Assange walks out of an ABC interview calling the guy a tabloid schmuck. You'll pardon us, Mr. Assange, but we're Americans. This is our country that you're attempting to take a huge dump on. So, guess what? Leaked police reports from Sweden are providing the most detailed account of to date of the rape and molestation charges against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Assange was freed from a London jail on $300,000 bail on Thursday. Some of that money contributed by Fat Boy himself, by that hot dog sucking Michael Moore. Details have been fairly opaque until now. The UK Guardian, one of WikiLeaks' media partners, now reports it's seen the police documents memorializing the claims made by two alleged victims, Miss A and Miss W. Both women described having sexual encounters with Assange during his visit there last year. And just to get to the meat of the matter, he held a one woman down. According to his statement, she tried to put on some articles of clothing as it was going too quickly and uncomfortably, but Assange ripped them off again. He also held one woman down when she attempted to get him to wear a condom, so on and so forth. So there's a story that we will consider.
Yeah, he can move to to Switzerland.
What's Switzerland?
I mean Switzerland.
Switzerland, why?
They're going to legalize incest.
Oh, there you go, Assange. There's hope yet. Phil Hendry Show is produced... Switzerland. Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rantz, technical director Charles Wigan, and our associate producer is Dan Northcraft. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show's online home is philhendryshow.com for live streaming video, all of those wonderful archives, and the shop, brother. Go get some, man. We'll see you.
Phil Hendry.